Greetings and welcome back to the Sexual Healing Podcast, episode 14. On the Sexual Healing Podcast, we are two 40-something black gay men that get together to talk about the various issues in life. So I am one of your co-hosts. I go by the name Dr. Pookie, and with me this evening is...
Dark Boy. I'm the other one.
Yes, you are the other one, Dark Boy.
Yes.
welcome.
Thank you.
So how are you doing this week? What got you through?
Actually, this week was not too bad. I'm back on my vegetarian diet.
Oh, Lord.
And I think I've lost... I haven't gotten on the scale yet, but I do think I've lost some of the weight that I gained on vacation.
Oh.
I know I gained weight. I know I totally gained weight, but I think I've already lost it, so I'm feeling good about that.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm not even going to tell that lie. Although, I believe today I have not had any meat yet.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I don't believe that to be a trend that's going to continue. I had to run a few errands, but I've been basically at my desk most of the week, working like Moses' homeboy. You know, after he decided to come out as Jewish and, you know, was enslaved. And just today, I have not been on top of my game. I'm making mistakes like a high school freshman. It's ridiculous.
See, maybe you need meat, though.
I do. I think I do. I mean, yeah, it's a mess. But I got the major thing for today done. It's out to my client. I'm very pleased about that, along with my bill. So... And it's fiscal year end, so, you know, I should get paid pretty quickly. So that's always
okay.
Nice. Yeah. We'll see. I'm hoping. But yeah, so I don't know. So I guess in the interest of us trying to keep this thing going and moving forward in a nice manner, I guess we shall get into our next segment, which is the Blacklist.
The Blacklist.
Yes.
The Blacklist, that's our... list of all things black, things that we like, we hate, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just, each of us has a list of three, and we go up or backwards. I don't know what's the correct way to say that. So we do 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, count down to the top one.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this week we're doing our favorite black authors.
Yes. And I guess, I don't know if you have any like columnists. I mean, obviously when you think of authors, you think of novels and things like that, but I guess it could have been playwrights, it could have been poets, it could have been journalists, but
yeah.
Okay. Oh, so you did think about it that way.
I did, but and I normally read a lot of articles, you know, in magazines, mm-hmm. or in newspaper or online or whatever. But I never pay attention. I hardly ever pay attention to who actually wrote it. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, that changes it.
So I didn't pick any journalists, you know.
So. Okay.
Do you want to start? You want me to start?
I don't know. I guess you could start.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will start with my number three.
Okay.
And my number three is James Baldwin.
Oh, Gentleman James.
Yes. And that is solely because of I'm Not Your Negro.
Okay.
I mean, and there's other stuff I know, but that's my only experience with him.
Oh, gosh. James is awesome.
There needs to be more. I totally admit it. I'll put it out there. I'm, you know, I'm a little deficient in, you know, James Baldwin's materials, we'll say.
Well, yeah, he has a nice catalog.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's the... Yeah, he was talking shit back in the day. Folks wasn't ready.
That's what I really like about it, because he just said, you know, whatever came to his mind. And like I said, he was a brave man to be saying the stuff he was saying. So
yeah, because I got like a it's like a combination of some of his essays from back then, from like The Fire Next Time and things like that. And I didn't get a chance to really get into it because I went to a reading party. I think I've mentioned those to you. There's a group, the Long Beach Cultural Arts Society or something like that, Literary Arts Co-op. they have a what they call a monthly reading party where we meet in a hotel lobby and, you know, we order our food, our drinks, and we just sit and read. It sounds like, oh, you go to that, but it's really nice when you really struggle to slow down and just read a book. It's a blessing to have that. So it's one of my staples. It's only once a month, unfortunately, but, you know. Yeah, so I took some James, was the whole point of saying all that. I took some James, and I think I got 5 pages in, and then they all left me there. So, but yeah, I do have some James, and I remember as a sophomore and undergrad, there was a professor teaching a course on James Baldwin, and we show up, and there are more people than can reasonably fit in the class, because I think she wanted it to be a seminar, like 15 people. So she starts, like, she doesn't hand out a syllabus, but she starts talking about all the stuff you have to do. And some people got up and left. Other people stayed. And so she's like, okay, well, let me see by show of hands how many of you are freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And I think there was one grad student in the class. And so there were no freshmen, so she basically said, she's like, sophomores are going to have to go. And we got put out.
Oh, like, really?
Yes. Oh, God. It hurt my heart. I still bought all the books for the class, but it would have been nice to have read them within a framework, particularly how they were being discussed. It was, from what I hear, it was an awesome class, and most of the work that she was talking about they ended up not doing, obviously, because she was trying to scare people out of the room. But, yeah, I'm still salty with her about that, that she put us out. I can see it now, and I can hear her voice. Sophomores got to go. And I think one of my friends, actually, she was a sophomore. We came in together. I think she went back, and she let her in. And I said, well, damn, I gave up too easily. But yeah, James is awesome. Definitely, when you get a chance to read some of his other stuff, you know, you will love it, I think.
I will do it, yes.
I've gotten through Giovanni's Room and Another Country and Just Above My Head and several other things, so it's been great. Okay, so my number three.
Yes.
Okay, my number three is also James Baldwin.
Oh, very interesting.
Yes. But I will give a bonus item because we've already talked about James. So my number four, which was by a very slim, slim margin, is Samuel Delaney. He is a...
I don't know him.
Yeah, Sam is... he is a black gay science fiction author, award-winning. He's kind of one of the godfathers, if not the black godfather of black science fiction, which is kind of morphing into the Afrofuturism movement. I didn't know this man existed until my freshman year in undergrad. And one of my professors assigned his, Stars in My Pockets, like grains of sand. I can't remember if that was his, that was partly an autobiography, I think.
I don't know.
It was one of his memoirs. Yeah, I think it was one of his memoirs. And so she assigned that as reading in a contemporary fiction course. And I just said, who is this guy? Oh, my gosh. And I'm reading his stuff. And I'm just like, wow, your life has been very interesting. So I have read some of his stuff. He has two different genres. He does science fiction and does it extremely well. Very imaginative brother. He writes well. You know, he's pretty incredible. But then you also have his other stuff, which is really looking at the boundaries of sexuality and expression. And it's some wild shit. It's out there. It's really okay. Out there. But it's really good.
Sounds like an interesting man.
Yeah, Sam's stuff is intense, but he's awesome. I love him. And so he and James Baldwin, I think they're both outlaws in that regard. They will write whatever the hell they want. Sam is all about sexual liberation and, you know, and science fiction. I don't think he writes a lot of science fiction anymore. Yeah, he'll do short stories and probably has stuff in his catalog that will show up in an anthology. But he's like a literature professor at Temple University, and yeah, might be retiring soon. Okay, so who is your number two?
My number two is Maya Angelou.
Ooh, the bird. All right.
Yes.
He's singing.
That was... So, I mean, maybe I'm... I don't know if I should be embarrassed that I know why The Caged Bird Sings was the first book that I read from cover to cover.
Oh.
Now, it was assigned to us in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what grade. I just remember in high school. But that was the first book that I... Well, other than the little kids' books that you read when you're younger, obviously. But the first book that I read from cover to cover. And, I liked it. It was just very... I mean, I guess it was kind of... I mean, it was like a... From what I remember, like an autobiography?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, intermixed with... Yeah. So, I thought it was great. Yeah, I just...
Okay.
I just love the way she wrote, and I liked her poems.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, her... I mean, I know I've seen more of her poems than, obviously, any of her books or anything. That, to me, that's what I know her more for later on, was the poems, not books, but...
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And, you know, it's scary, and I'm a little ashamed to say I've not read any Maya. I've read some of her poems, but in terms of picking up one of her books or even a collection of her poetry, I've never done it. I definitely respect the hell out of her, and I went to see her speak once, and she was phenomenal.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, you know, Oprah's godmother, she's cool with me, you know. but I suspect that at some point I will sit down and read some of her stuff, because I hear it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I love Phenomenal Woman, the poem, and Still I Rise, and she's, you know, yeah. Okay. So,
all right. Your number two?
So my number two is a bit on the pulpy side.
On the what?
On the pulpy side. He actually admits that his stuff is not literature, that he's not a writer, he's a storyteller, and I'm like, well, dude, whatever. My number two is Mr. E. Lynn Harris.
Okay, I thought he might be on your list.
Yes, because he is one of the few people that has had me sitting up till 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning finishing his book. I have read all of his books except for his memoir, and there's a new one, or newish to me, called Basketball Jones that I have not read yet. But I love Elin. He was a big part of me coming out. And just kind of the normality around that, and just, oh, you know, you're not alone, but to kind of see what life could be, you know, his books were instrumental in that regard. I have, gosh, 6 autographed copies of his books in my library. I actually brought them to my undergrad, to my graduate school to speak. I was the president of our Black Student Union, and we brought him in, and I was fanboying. It was a mess. I had to read his bio, and I was just, it was a mess. So, because I was just like, oh my God, he's here. And just, you know, yeah, it was, but he's my number two, because even though there are quote unquote better writers out there, he's a great storyteller. He can bring the drama. One of my issues with Elin, though, is that he would build up this pot, and you'd be like, okay, Elin, you got 20 pages left. You got to wrap all this shit up. And you're just like, I don't want you to wrap it up in 20 pages. That's not delicious. I need it to be long and savory, not, you know, quick and melting in my mouth as soon as it gets in there. That would be my one complaint about Elin, but I love his work. Some of his stuff I've read more than once. So, yeah.
He likes a quick climactic ending, I suppose.
Yeah. it's like with him, you climb Everest and then you just base jump off that bitch. I mean, it's like that's what reading his stuff is like to me. It's still, but he builds up a frothy pot, so I'm not mad. I've cried, I've laughed, I've hollered, I've gasped, I've done all sorts of things reading his work. But okay. So, it is time for your number one.
My number one is Michelle Alexander.
Oh, new Jim Crow.
Yes. Yes. And I, you know, after I read that book, I kind of, I don't want to say became obsessed, but I can't think of another word. I started looking, there's tons of videos of her giving speeches and talks on YouTube. She may even did one of those, what do they call, did they call them TEDs? TED,
Oh, a TED Talk.
TED
I don't.
Talks. I think she did one of those.
Oh,
Don't
wow.
quote, I mean, don't, you know,
Yeah, I don't know if she
quote
actually
me on
did
that one,
one.
but I think she did. So I was watching those, listening, and I wanted to write. I thought she was writing another book, but I don't. I haven't heard anything. So,
She probably is. I think that more than likely she's writing another one. I mean, the reality is I think she's an attorney, so you know, she's a little busy.
yeah, very smart.
It's like
Yeah, and I like that she, because I mean, honestly, I think before I read that book, I don't think I realized the extent. I mean, I just like that she pointed out how just systematic everything has been, and the discrimination, and you know, all this kind of stuff that's been going on. It just keeps being repackaged, and it's, and I don't, I think because it's being done like that, it's not as noticeable. You know, or it's not as noticeable for a while, and by then, by the time it has to change, they have something else, and then that goes unnoticed for a little while. So it's just like, I just liked how she was able to see that and point that stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, 'cause you certainly in our Facebook meme culture, you'll get the occasional thing about mass incarceration and sentencing guidelines and how, you know, black folks are definitely getting the short end of the stick in that regard.
Yeah.
Lives utterly destroyed, in many cases. And
Family is destroyed too in the process.
yeah, I mean, and then you wonder why there's so much instability in some of our communities. We've not even had a chance to truly heal and recover from slavery, frankly, because all of these different systems that have been in place to sustain white supremacy have made it very
Yeah.
difficult for us to really pull our act together as a people. So, you know, and that's a conversation that you and I had with a certain gentleman that got very frustrating for me.
Yes.
And so, love him dearly, but it was frustrating.
Yeah, I kept my mouth shut a little bit during that one because I wasn't trying to get my pressure up.
I
So
know.
I
I wish I could have
didn't.
kept my mouth shut, but I appreciated how our other, you know, fellow firebrand kind of would jump in and tag team, and then he'd kind of be like, "Okay, you in it again." It was very fascinating because it was just too simple. The thing that I want to watch is also 13th, the documentary on Netflix.
Oh, I've seen that.
I have not watched it yet.
Very good.
And I hear it's also very tough to watch because it just breaks all that shit down in minute detail. And it's just really stunning when you kind of see it laid out as a master plan. And I think, I don't know if it talks about like the bail issue with just the
The
idea.
cash bail, you mean?
Yeah,
Cash
cash
bail.
bail. Yeah.
I don't remember.
I mean, that's really an emerging thing. I mean, it's been around for probably generations, frankly, but in terms of getting on the radar of a lot of groups, and this is now it's time to really start attacking this particular issue. It's huge right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're calling it the war on poverty, frankly. And it's frightening. It's really frightening. Michelle's book definitely was an eye opener for me. I
Me,
knew
yeah,
it.
totally.
Yeah, I mean, I knew shit was fucked up. And you always hear people griping about the criminal justice system. But to see a researched and systematic breakdown was, it was a game changer for me. So, I don't know. We probably need to add that to the,
Yeah, we should.
yeah, we need
That
to
should,
add
that's
that to the list.
as a
Okay.
topic. Yes, exactly.
Okay, I'll write it down. New Jim Crow. Okay. So, I believe we're
You're
supposed to be
number
doing my
one.
number one. Okay.
Yes.
So, my number one, is Dame Octavia Butler.
Okay.
She is the black mother of science fiction. She's no longer with us. But this sister is bad. She has written lots of books and series of books, just, and she creates worlds out of our world. Like, she'll have aliens in the desert, you know? It's like, and just those kinds of things. And the thing that she's the one that, reading her stuff kind of encouraged me to work on my novel, truth be told, because I looked at how she wrote, and I said, okay, I can do this. And because it was just the idea of how do you create a world without having exhaustive detail. And her books are not, they don't go over, certain ones do not take a lot of time in terms of elapsed time within the book. There was one book that it was only like 2 days.
Okay.
And another one was probably more like 10 days, but a lot of that was spent out on a journey. And so it was just, her writing is fascinating. It tickles my imagination. And she also makes me holler because she pushes the boundaries in some really cool ways.
I like the boundary pushers.
Yeah, she's not like this, you know, down with Whitey. That's not her boundary. Like, she definitely interrogates race and picks it apart, and she does cut some folks, but she does it in a very incisive and insightful way in the worlds that she creates, and the dynamics are there. So I definitely recommend, you know, Octavia Butler, the Patternist series with the Pattern Master, and I can't think of the names of the other books. The Parables series, I haven't started that yet, but it's next. And then the Exogenesis series. One of the books from that is going to be made into a TV show. It's supposed to be. I haven't heard anything about it since, but they said it was a go. Okay. And so, we'll, you know, we'll see. But yeah, Octavia is bad. She is, I love her. She is a bad one. I love her. So I had
Which book is going to get made into a movie or to a TV show?
Dawn, D A W N. It has what was the other? I think Dawn is the name of it, but it had like the Exogenesis series or something like that. So sometimes it had a different name. Let me see here. I'm consulting Madam Google. Octavia Butler. But I think it is part of the Exogenesis series. Exogenesis, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I can't think of the other ones in that series though. But it's, her stuff is awesome. You know, they've started putting her stuff into like compendias, so you'll get three books in one. Like, I bought three of her books for, I think, $2 on Amazon as an ebook. So I bought the whole Patternist series, except for the one book that she basically disavowed. it's like, she wrote it; it was released. Eventually, she grew to hate it, and ooh, it was out of print. So if you want to read it, it's going to cost you some serious money. But it's out there. You can get your hands on it, but it's going to cost you. I think that one's called Colony or Vision or something like that. I can't remember. But it's really good.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's part of the Patternist series, which is like 5 books. So, but yeah, Octavia, she's a bad girl. Love her. So I had a couple of honorable mentions, and some of them you've heard of, and one of them is a wild card. Edwige Danticat. So Edwige, Danticat is her last name, Danticat. Awesome writer from the Caribbean. Yeah, sister is no joke. I would love to hear her speak and do a reading. Of course, you know, the venerable Alice Walker, as well as Toni Morrison. I think any of them being on the list would have been kind of moot. so I didn't even put them in. But then, the wild card, one of my favorite books, is The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexander Dumas. Most folks don't know he was black. it's like, according to the one drop rule, he's black.
Okay.
I believe his father was a Moor, maybe? I don't know if he's a Moor, but his father was black. But he's a French writer, and one of my favorite books, Count of Monte Cristo. Just, you know, vengeance, serve cold. It's rough. So, yeah. But okay, I'm done on about books. And authors, and maybe, you know, there's somebody that you like out there. If I'm feeling inspired, I may actually put our lists up with links so you can kind of explore some of these people's work. And we'll probably set up, I'll probably do a link to their Amazon author pages. So keep an eye out for that, dear audience. But in the meantime, we're going to move on into our main topic. And this week we are going to explore not so much as experts, but just really kind of laying out the territory, because we want to bring in an expert to talk about polyamory and non-monogamous relationships. But we are going to start that conversation with this episode, and we're going to kind of do some basic vocabulary and describe some of the various type of relationship configurations that are out there. So we all understand, I hope, that monogamy, even if you've not thought about it very much, monogamy is a relationship between two people, and it's closed, is what some people call it, a closed relationship, as opposed to one that's open. And so, but you have this whole other universe of non-monogamous relationships that are really, as our society starts to shift and become more open and less puritanical, people are kind of coming out of the closet with the nature of their relationships and the ways that they love. And so there is this thing called ethical non-monogamy. Because most people think about non-monogamy as just, oh, you just out there hoeing fucking everything.
You're cheating.
Yeah, and it's cheating and, you know, infidelity. And, I mean, you could certainly define it that way in the literal sense. Yes, it is infidelity. However, if it's negotiated.
With permission.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. It's negotiated. You know, when you talk about ethical non-monogamy, there are really three central elements there. And the first part is honesty, like really being open and honest about what it is you want to do and what you are doing with your partner. You're going to have a primary, and then you have extra partners, 1, 3, 5, who knows? But you have like a husband or a wife or a partner or a spouse, and then you have a girlfriend or you have a boyfriend. Or you have a partner or a relationship with someone somewhere along the gender identity spectrum.
Yep.
To be more inclusive with the language. The second aspect, and I'm going to finish this exposition very soon. I'm so sorry, Dark Boy, is mutual consent. So it's not something, so it's mutual. Both of you agree to it. And by consent, you also very clearly lay out what are the parameters, what are we allowed to do, what's off limits. If we do have sex with other people, are we doing it together? Are we separate? What do I and do not want to know about? It's just, you know, it's really negotiating all those terms, because it takes a lot of communication and a lot of maturity to pull these relationships off, because jealousy is... it's big and it's quick to rise and attack. And then you have the last part, which is choice, where you basically have the choice to practice what's been agreed upon and what's in your spirit and what's in your sexual drive and your interests. And so that's kind of what it is. And I don't know, do you have any thoughts?
I'm not sure about the difference between the second and the third one. But.
Well, it's basically mutual consent is the idea of laying out the parameters so you know what you're consenting to, as opposed to you can say, oh, well, you know, Dark Boy, I want to have an open relationship. And you're like, okay. And we didn't talk about what open means to you versus what it means to me.
Okay.
And so it's an idea of both people having informed consent, a very clear idea about what's happening here, what do your relationships mean to you? Are they purely sexual? Is there an emotional component? And what each partner can handle. And it's open to amendment on some level if the primary relationship is in danger, I would imagine.
Okay.
Versus choice of really you now get to choose to practice this arrangement or live into your sexuality. So you may have a married couple, a man and a woman, and the husband realizes that he does have yearnings for sexual activity with other women and possibly with other men.
I was going to say yearning for dick. That's what I thought.
Well, I didn't want to just be cliche and just put him right on a dick. But Yes, it's a beautiful thing. So no need to run from it. But he may decide, hey, you know, I'd like to have some experiences with another couple where it's a no holds barred affair versus, you know, a cuckold fantasy or something like that, where it's truly a three-way menage a trois where all partners are engaged sexually in one another without any real hardcore limits. And, you know, his partner, his wife might say to him, you know, babe, I really understand that, but I'm going to need you having sex with one person at a time, please. And so they have to negotiate that and compromise on some level. And that type of conversation would probably come down to them talking and getting to the root of why she's balking at him wanting to have sex with a couple. As opposed to having sex with possibly two unmarried folks or just two random folks, you know, that kind of thing. So,
okay.
But yeah, so that's the very fine shade of difference is between those two terms.
See, that's why you're the doctor, Dr. Pookie, and I'm not.
Yeah, but my knowledge about some of this stuff is rusty, and also so much has changed in terms of discovery of the psychology behind, you know, polyamorous relationships. It's not like this is new. It's been around since the beginning of time.
Well, yeah.
It's the norm in some other cultures. Here, it's like a huge deal. But other places, it's a relatively normative practice, or it's an option. I'll put it that way. That's not so far out in left field. So,
I don't know. Yeah.
Didn't we kind of go, okay, so back in the 60s, I mean, I wasn't alive then, but there always seemed to be this thing that people, well, 60s or maybe 70s, maybe more, that people just seemed to be having these orgies all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Swinging and orgies.
Yeah,
and
free love.
Did we just kind of go back for a while, like in the 80s and 90s, and we kind of took a step back and now we're going forward again? Like, it's more okay now than it was in the 90s?
I think that, yeah, we've definitely taken several steps forward in that regard. People are much more out in the open. I think technology has certainly helped because it gives you access to so many people so easily.
They could find those unicorns.
Yeah, I mean, you can. It's like shopping in like the Mall of America, I would imagine, using a lot of apps, because you can certainly be very discerning and very picky. And you're like, I'm looking for, you know, this guy that is into football fetish and he has to have this build. And, you know, and you can have all these different ideas and eventually you'll find them, but you'll probably get blue balls first.
Right.
Like, you know, but you can certainly find them. But I do think that the folks that were doing it back in the day, they still are. I think they're very low tech with it. They are still
old school.
They're still old school. They're still throwing dinner parties and putting the keys in a bowl, and you know, I remember I talked to them, I was like, y'all really still put the keys in a bowl? They said, uh-huh. I said, oh, okay. They were like, ain't nothing wrong with it. It still works.
Well, yeah.
It ain't broke. Don't fix it. You know? And I think also, like, the advent of ED medications, Cialis, Viagra, and the like, have also extended the sexual vibrancy for a lot of men, certainly. Because we see stuff like diabetes and hypertension, and those things can really impact your sexual functioning. And then you just have your typical American man that doesn't really exercise like he's supposed to, and the American diet is kind of terrible. Mm-hmm. So those dicks get a little impacted. So they still have the idea in their mind, but sometimes their body is like, yeah, not today. And so they can take a pill, you know, and put on a cock ring, and they're good to go.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, where's the tail? Let me see the fresh tail.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it is interesting. You do have groups of people that are friend groups. Like, sometimes you have a group of folks that they meet strictly for sex, and they'll socialize when they're together, but they don't meet outside of that context. And then you have other situations where you have a group of strangers that have maybe come together for sexual purposes and have actually formed relationships and friendships, so they do hang out.
Outside of
the orgy, yes.
Okay.
And outside of the sex party. So, yeah, and I mean, I've encountered a lot of different configurations about that. There are several peer groups like that in Palm Springs.
And, oh, I can imagine.
Oh, yeah, the Springs is jumping. And the funny part about the Springs, you know, it's a gay mecca. There are lots of gay men there. You just don't know where everything is going on. So you got to know people to get plugged in.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's the odd thing. I remember one time I was there on business, and I got like an email from like an online acquaintance talking about, hey, you're in town, right? And I said, yeah. And I think he had come down from San Francisco. So he sent me like an invitation to a party, which I thought was a normal party. I guess it was a normal Palm Springs party, but
yeah.
I said, well, damn, I didn't know I was supposed to. Oh, righty. And, you know, I enjoyed the people I met there. I didn't do anything that night. I was going to
say, you didn't partake?
No, I didn't, actually. I ended up talking business with this one guy from San Francisco, actually. It was weird. But, yeah, because I didn't. He was just like, well, I thought you knew what I meant. I was like, how would I know you're inviting me to a sex party? You could have at least said it was a sex party. You could have said what the dress code was. You could have said something. You just said, hey, here's, you know, I'm going to this party. Meet me. That's all was said. So
he was a little sly with it, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, if he wanted some, he could have had it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, we hooked up the next day, but damn. it was just weird.
Well, he probably thought, well, if it's the Springs, that means you already know what's up.
That's true. Thought that. But the funny thing was, I actually, some of the guys that I met at that event, I'm still in contact with. Like, they're really cool people. And if they're in town or they're, you know, they're going to an event that's relatively close, they'll drop me a line like, hey, are you coming to this thing? Let's get together, you know, let's do some lunch or something, dinner, you know, if you want to come to this thing. And I'm usually like, no, my thing days are over, probably. It's like, I can't be out there that wild. But yeah, so it's been interesting. Yeah, so some of these different forms that like a non-monogamous relationship can take, and they overlap too.
They do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at this material here. The first one they list is a casual relationship. So that's like a physical and emotional relationship between two unmarried people who may have a sexual relationship.
So is that like a friends with benefits type of thing, I suppose? Maybe that's...
Yeah, more than likely. Okay. That definitely fits in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and you're just like, yeah, it was, then, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cuckoldry?
Yeah, cuckoldry.
Or cuckold, I guess.
Or, yeah, I don't know if I'm cuckoldry saying that right. is a person who has sex with another individual without the consent of their partners or purposely excludes them from sex.
See, to me, that's not how I have. I mean, now in the porn world or Tumblr world, whatever.
Yeah, I was about to mention that.
Yeah, the cuck. It's always the husband. It always seems to be more like in like I've always pictured it being the wife. I always picture it being heterosexual. I'm sure there's gay versions. I just haven't seen much of that, I guess. But that the wife wants to sleep with other men because maybe they have a bigger dick or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband gets off on seeing his wife with another man. That's how I've always pictured it. Maybe that's the old school or the old definition of it. So, yeah. But to me, it was always with consent because the husband was usually there watching or filming or jacking off in the corner somewhere. So.
Yeah, if not barking out directions.
Yeah.
you know, well, and yeah, I think in the porn, obviously, it gives a somewhat false representation of what cuckoldry is, because if you look at like the animal kingdom, it also refers to a male species claiming an offspring as their own when it actually belongs to another male.
Okay.
So it's kind of like this idea when you take it to sexual activity, it's basically a husband observing his wife having sex with another man. And it usually does not involve the husband physically engaging with them, per se. Sometimes, if it does, the combinations that I've seen and that I've heard about, it's really been the husband maybe interacting with his wife in some way, but really, he's a bystander. He keeps his clothes on. You know, his dick might be out through, you know, unzipping his fly, but he generally keeps his clothes on. And, you know, the cuckolds I've talked to have basically described it that way. They said it's not, for them, the thrill is, in fact, watching their wife have sex with someone else because she's going to react differently, she's going to move differently, she's going to make different sounds. Perhaps she's, you know, her breathing's going to change. Maybe she'll be more orgasmic or multi-orgasmic with this guy as opposed to him. And it's just a way to kind of flip the script and do something
okay,
different.
Okay, with those guys that you talk to, does the dick size of the other guy, does that matter to them? Again, my mind has always been that the guy has to have a bigger dick.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially in a porn context, you're definitely going to get, you know, the Mandingo fascination going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are times where you may have a husband that is not as well endowed and he wants his wife to enjoy a larger penis.
But these people that you know, is that important to them? Is that an issue?
One of the guys, he mentioned it. It wasn't primary for him. Okay. It was really about watching. It was like he really loved his wife. He was totally turned on by her. But he described it as almost seeing her in a different light in the middle of sex with someone else where he's not having sex with her. So he's focused on her in a very different way. Okay. 'Cause he actually describes it as almost not even seeing the other guy. It's like the guy is there. He's obviously doing stuff, but he almost doesn't see him. And and I just said, well, that's fascinating. And yeah, we have to get my homegirl Lori on because she is a sexologist and she definitely she'll have some things to share. Just getting her schedule can be difficult, but we're gonna do it.
Yes, we must try. We must get her on.
Yeah, because my girl be all over the world. She travels. But when she's in Long Beach, she's not far away.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next type that they had listed here was a group marriage. And this is where you have several people that form a single familial unit with each considered to be married to one another. And the most recent example I've seen of this was on the TV show Elementary, where you had a research scientist who was murdered And it's discovered that she's actually in a group marriage, so to speak, with two doctors that work at the hospital. And those two men were actually married to one another.
Oh, my goodness.
And so that was kind of what a lot of people call a throuple.
Yes.
And then you had the group marriage that you also had over the course of the investigation. She had moved. She had come from another group marriage. And I think there were five or six people in that marriage. And it was very fascinating because they all lived together and they had, they were all individuals, but they were all together. And I don't know what the sexual arrangements were, but it seemed to me that they were definitely, it was anything goes kind of household.
Okay.
And I don't know if they were able to have relationships outside. You know.
Well, yeah, if you group married, maybe you don't need to. I don't know.
Yeah, because you have, like, you know, with the group marriage, you also have, like, what they call polyfamilies. I've been having this coughing thing since last night. It's getting on my nerves. So you also have this phenomenon called polyfamilies, which is like group marriages, but some of the members of the family may not consider themselves married to all the other members, so they may only be attached to one person in the house.
Okay, like one other type, one other, not everybody. It's not everybody in the group is married to each other, but you may be tied to two other people. And
yeah, because you'll have situations where, I guess, the legal parts of it, I think you'll have couples that will marry within the family, and then there'll be co-ownership maybe of the property, because you kind of see an aspect of this on, like, the shows on our Discovery Channel with the polyamorous families, or no, polygamous families, where you have the husband and their 2, 3, 4 wives. Those women aren't sexually involved with one another, but they are a family. You know, they're all having kids, they're raising kids together. It's interesting, and it's fascinating to watch because you do have issues of jealousy that arise.
That's bound to happen.
Yeah, so it's fascinating to see those shows.
Now, is this the same thing? Because on the list that there was another type of relationship, and they described it as line families. A new one to me, and that's where. They said it's a form of group marriage intended to outlive the original members by the addition of the ongoing addition of new spouses. That is a totally new one to me.
Yeah, line marriages are really fascinating because it's a group marriage, but what happens is as they mature, obviously the original folks are probably going to die off.
Yeah.
And so
eventually,
eventually, and even the young ones might get hit by a bus or something. But
that's true.
The people that are remaining in the family, they're taking on new spouses. So they're coming into the house and basically you are the XYZ family. And you just continue to marry new people as you encounter them. And there's that attraction there. It's a fascinating concept.
Yeah, that's a totally new. I'm a totally new one to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's kids involved with this one. I mean, like, do they have kids? Are they raising kids?
I
suppose, but
yeah,
I just never heard of that one before.
And the interesting thing about with them having kids is also the kids are raised in the environment, so they're really not necessarily that they're going to adopt it as a form of marriage, but they're certainly much more open and flexible about what they want, about the type of relationship they'll get into. And I also think that the research has shown that they are much more knowledgeable and discerning about their intimate relationships. You hear a lot of people saying, oh, it's damaging to children, And in reality, the kids are just like, it's normal to them. It's not damaging until the outside world starts saying, oh, your parents this and that, and mistreat them. So there are a lot of prejudices that come in to play when you have these quote-unquote alternate family structures. And just the idea also that, is it possible to love more than one person at a time? A lot of people would argue that it isn't. And
I don't know.
But I don't know if they really...
I've never tried it, so I guess I don't have...
Yeah,
experience with it.
Yeah, I don't know if I've tried. I'm trying to think. Maybe I overlooked somebody. It's like, no, I think I remember that. It's not that long a list here. But even, I'm trying to think if I've been in a relationship with anyone who was poly. I guess so, but I wouldn't call that a relationship in that way. We certainly were not married. But he definitely was into other people, and I was like, okay, I'm just one of your folks, so it's like, this is not a big loss for me. So do you, and do you well. Just understand, latex, I will have my barriers going on with you, because I don't have time for no foolishness, But yeah, so that's probably as close as I've come to a polyamorous relationship, I would say. And that's just kind of open. It wasn't even like a relationship like, oh, we're going to get married. It wasn't that at all. So I think, so the next type of relationship that we can take a look at is group sex and orgies. which is really, I mean, obviously, if you have an intimate relationship that has more than two people, it becomes an orgy, so to speak, or it's group sex. But I feel like these two terms are really more sexual than they are...
relationship.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like they're activities. You could have someone who is in an open relationship who attends orgies. I mean, I think that's probably what they're talking about here. In terms of how that's...
Because the way they describe it, seemed like a ménage à trois is more of a relationship, which I never really thought of it that way, but that's what this says. You know, it says it's a sexual and sometimes domestic arrangement involving three people. See, to me, I thought it was just three people getting together to have sex. So I never really thought of the domestic part, but...
Yeah, it's interesting.
I just thought it was kind of another name for... Well, I guess an orgy can involve more than three people, but...
Yeah. I mean, I guess unofficially it starts at... it starts at three, but we typically call three a ménage à trois. Once you get to four, it's definitely officially an orgy. And some people even call that a forgy.
A foursome. Or a foursome?
Yeah, or a foursome. You can go to five with a quintuple deluxe, hey. So it's very interesting. The thing that's fascinating with the ménage à trois, I get the feeling that that's almost like a throuple that's closed. Because, it's a sexual arrangement, so that could be a married couple and, that infamous unicorn that Dan Savage talks about, that woman that's good and I can't think, it's GGG, I can't think of what the other G's are.
I think it's good giving in game or something like that. I think that's what it is.
That sounds familiar, yes.
Yes.
And then they have the domestic option here. I think if it's domestic, then it probably is possibly a closed throuple, but... It could be open, but I don't know why they wouldn't just call that something else. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Okay. So, let's see here. So, one of the other options here was polyfidelity, which is really an interesting configuration. That's where they have multiple... Like, each person in a relationship can have multiple partners, but they restrict sexual activity to within a certain group. So, it's very interesting because you have this group of polyamorous folk that are basically in a relationship with one another, they have permission and space to go out and have relationships with other people, but the sexual activity is restricted. And I wonder if that's sex altogether, or is that certain sexual activities you cannot do?
Yeah, I don't understand. That one is like, okay, so if there's three groups, A, B, and C, I can only have sex with people in group B? Is that how that is? Or I don't understand that. Okay.
Yes, I mean, you could think about it. The other thing I can think of is certainly I've encountered people that have those kind of relationships, and they'll say, you know what, you may not kiss, you may not date. Kissing is reserved for me. You may not date this person because it needs to be sexual and nothing else. So I don't have time for you to be going out and getting to know them and all that stuff. You need to be fucking, and that's the extent of it. And put your drawers back on and get up out of there. I've had conversations with folks in a clinical setting, as well as a non-clinical. And even when I was on a project in a prison and we were interviewing people, one of the people I talked to, you know, who had all the dirt in the unit, he had all the dirt. And he was talking about some of the different arrangements. And you did have, I don't know if they were, if there was love involved per se, but you certainly had some very interesting configurations. Like you had a couple that were very heteronormative. You had the quote unquote masculine top and the more feminine leaning bottom. And they were monogamous, except if the top, his people on the outside, didn't put money on his books to keep up his cigarette habit, then his quote-unquote wife was allowed to go out and fuck someone else or suck some dicks to get his cigarettes fulfilled. And I said, so it's not an issue of you have to go do it. And he said, no, that's something I chose to do in this arrangement we have. Otherwise, I'm only sucking his dick. And I said, oh, okay. You know, so, and it was just like, all right. You know, because I heard about this person and this couple, and I ended up interviewing the person that told me about them initially, and then, you know, the quote-unquote wife I interviewed, and I also interviewed the husband. And it was just very fascinating. And, of course, it was off the books because, we finished up the interview early, so I was able to have a half hour to an hour in some cases to talk to these folks, and it was so cool. Some of the best stuff I've done, so I don't know. But yeah. Hmm. But yeah, but this is going to conclude part one of this discussion. You know, we definitely have more to talk about with the different formations of polyamory. It's not just polyamory, that's an umbrella. There are different types of relationships underneath that. There's also swinging and relationship anarchy, which is a very fascinating...
That's a new one to me, too.
Yeah, that one I've not heard of. And so we'll be continuing this conversation, and we may even try to bring a guest on to talk about this material as a practitioner of it. So we'll see what we can do with that. And if you are that person... Feel free to reach out to us via email, sexualhealingpod@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us in a direct message on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you, get your thoughts, and perhaps have you come on the show.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're going to move on into our letters. But actually, no, I always have to give Dark Boy his closing moment because, you know, I tend to talk more than him. So I got to be... I'd be thoughtful of my broadcast partner here. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add, Dark Boy?
The only thing I wanted to add, I would say, is I think I am surprised at how many heterosexual couples are into some sort of polyamory.
Mm-hmm.
I knew in the gay world it was no big deal.
Yeah.
It's been going on. It's a thing. It was whatever. But I listen to Dan Savage. I listen to the Savage Love Cast. And so I'm always surprised, or I used to be surprised at how many people are calling in about that they, you know, heterosexual marriages that they've decided to open up. So I'm always surprised, or I guess there's a whole lot more of it going on than I ever thought there was.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me is kind of taking, I kind of hope that at least if they're doing this, that there's that they're that those same people that are opening up their marriages and that have already done it, that there's some openness, mm-hmm. acceptance of gay people. I'm hoping that some of that trickles, but that mm-hmm. we get some of the effects of that. So I think all around, you know, the polyamory thing may actually help us gay people, you know. So that's mm-hmm. just what I wanted to say, just because, you know, I really only hear about it on Dan Savage. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just kind of interesting to hear, you know.
Yeah, there are a lot of couples out there that are open in various ways, and it's something that's generally kept under wraps in a lot of cases. I think polyamory is certainly at that frontier of gaining acceptance. I think it's now kind of out in the open, at least. People know it exists. They can't look at you and tell. So it's a thing of it being revealed. And
yeah, they have to come out the closet.
Yeah,
basically.
it's a coming out all over again. I mean, it's definitely that idea, you know. I think as gay men, we come out about our sexual orientation. We also come out in some degree about who we're attracted to. If it's off the beaten path, so to speak, we also come out about our fetishes and just the things that we're into. Coming out, you know, I remember hearing as a young one that it's an ongoing process, and, you know, because I remember when I finally just made everything official with my family, I was just like, ah, finally, okay, that's over. And the reality is that, no, it was just beginning, because now I felt like coming out was certainly, it took the shackles off of me to now figure out, okay, well, what do I like and what don't I like? And then once you figured all that out and articulating that, that's tough. It's challenging. It's scary as all hell. But it's no different than your average straight guy saying, hey, I like anal play. Babe, I really like someone to play with my ass. You know, it's, what was that, our pilot episode? Yeah. Where, you know, the woman was concerned that her man
yes.
might be gay.
Yeah.
And I was like, sweetie, are you aware of how many nerve endings are back there? Like, it's Pandora's box. You don't know what you're going to turn into when you get in there. And you're just supposed to enjoy the ride. But, yeah, I think that a lot of this is, you know, it's part of sexuality. It's part of being in a relationship and how we connect. And it is very intimate. And if you stray outside of the box as it's been constructed, then there can be problems in the wider world. But certainly behind your closed doors, you're good to go. So I think that people are slowly, they're at a certain point, you're aware of the stuff you want to do and what interests you. It's just a matter of whether you're going to allow yourself to do it. That's what it comes down to. And you've seen some couples that have said, you know what, I'm tired of your dick, I'm tired of your pussy, let's bring a new one in here.
Yes.
Just, you know, and the why, and then it's just like, well, do we bring in another guy? Do we bring in another woman? And husbands are usually like, no, I don't want another dude in here. And, you know, and then we were like, well, look, I'll suck a titty, but that's about as good as it's going to get, you know, or I'll watch you fuck her. You know, it's just, you have these different quote unquote cuckold relationships and arrangements. So it's fun. You know, I think we discussed this today to expose folks that didn't know about this stuff or heard a little bit in passing, to just kind of say, here's what's out there. Here's what's going on. And if some of this works for you, then damn it, get with it.
Yes.
that is our advice. And when we continue this conversation in the future, it's going to be get with it. You know, explore yourself. It's an ongoing process. But okay. I think we beat that horse, and
yes,
it's running away.
The end of part one.
Yes, the end of part one. Okay. So, Alrighty, so now we're going to move into Ask Your Barista, and these are letters from the women in our audience, and they get to ask us as gay men questions about their relationships and other stuff, just to get another perspective. So this letter comes from, I will name this madam, Mabel. No, Mabel. That's far too old school. That's far too old school.
It's like, I know a Mabel that's very young, so it's not old.
Do you? Wow.
Yes.
I know an Ethel who's maybe a year older than me, but I have a great aunt named Mabel. I believe she's a great aunt. Yeah, oh well. Okay, so let's see here. Donna. We'll go with Donna. Okay. So Donna has been dating a guy for 3 months, she says, and she asked him one day, you know, what most attracted him to her, and he kind of stumbled and bumbled, and after about 20 seconds of this, he said, your tits.
Oh.
She wants to know, should she dump his ass?
How long have they been together?
3 months. And I think the problem here is the way she phrased the question. If this is what she put in there, you know, it's what most attracted you to me, or what attracted you to me.
I wonder what was she expecting.
She was expecting something beyond her tits.
But what though? Her face.
Her personality, perhaps.
Yeah, but you don't see personality until...
They've been together 3 months, so hopefully he had seen some... And I think that was her whole thing. What else have you seen that intrigues you about me besides my rack?
Yeah, but her initial question was, what was the thing that most attracted him to her, right?
Yeah, what attracts you to me? Not initially, but just what, you know, are the things that attract you to me that... You know, I mean, I think they're still in new relationship energy phase, but
yeah. I don't know if she should. It's kind of tough because it seems. My thing is always they gotta have a talk, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if she's upset or hurt by what he said,
mm-hmm.
maybe she needs to. She should tell him.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, if he didn't say that's the only thing, I mean, if he's saying that was the only thing, then there's something. I guess there's an issue. Mm-hmm. But I do think she needs to tell him, talk to him. I mean, maybe even say what was she expecting, because that I don't necessarily think that's a very easy question to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many wrong ways to you could be giving your right answer, but it could be the wrong answer as far as the person asking it is concerned.
Mm-hmm. I think the reason Donna is upset is because whether she was asking about a physical attribute or, you know, a character or personality attribute, after 3 months of dating, she asks him, you know, what excites you about me? What intrigues you? And he couldn't think of anything. So it's like, are you here? Are you present? Are you even aware of who I am and what I'm bringing? I don't know what sex is like, but it might, you know, he might be laying the pipe, but...
Maybe.
He might be, but I'm like, is this really your man, sweetie? Or... Her question is definitely, is a trap. I mean, Donna, girl, you tripping. It's a trap. You need to be straight up about what it is you want to know. Is he just fucking you, or is he fucking you because he's interested in you?
Yeah, and I think at the same time, I mean, well, it's not really going to be, I don't want to say fair, but she probably needs to be prepared to say what attracted her to him, but she would have time to, you know, articulate it, you know, or think about it, or kind of put it together first. So he didn't really have that chance. And I mean, I would say, I am not the best person at being, you know, spontaneous, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say spontaneous, but I usually am the type of person that has to think about what I'm going to say, you know. Mm-hmm. And because, not because it's wrong or it's dishonest or anything, it's just that I don't want it to come out wrong. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So he may be that type of person and it still came out wrong anyway. Or wrong to you. So, I mean, yeah, it in a way, I guess if you don't want to just be reduced to your parts, you know, so I understand. Mm-hmm. It might have been a little too soon to ask that question. It's only been 3 months. I mean, if it was a year, because I always heard you don't really know someone until a year and a half. So it might have been a little too soon to even ask that question or mm-hmm. to expect such a deep answer, I suppose, you know.
Well, but I think that I feel like I get what you're saying. I just feel like after 3 months of dating and I have to suspect lots of conversation, he should have some idea as to why he keeps answering the phone when she calls or why he continues to take her out. And maybe he's just not a very articulate guy. He's not yeah. quick-witted and all that. But based on her letter, because she asks us to do a lot of mind reading, and I think that's also a problem, Donna. He can't read your mind, girl. You didn't yeah. give us enough details to really answer your question, but we took it anyway. So, but you really, we're having to infer a lot to respond to your question. Whether you should dump him or not, I feel like you need to ask him again. And you need to be prepared to talk about what it is you appreciate about him. It doesn't mean you have to know every nook and cranny of who this guy is, but you should be able to articulate why you continue to spend...
After 3 months, you're not going
to
know.
Huh?
It's too soon to know everything. After 3 months, you're not going to know. It's just too soon.
Well, I agree. You're not going to know the deep, dark secrets, but you do know whether this person is funny. You do know whether they're smart. You do know whether they have intriguing conversation. You do know whether they have a sense of whether they're in, you know, whether they, how they treat you. There are some clues. I mean, it's not the full story. Don't get me wrong. But there are some clues, and there has to be a reason that she's answering the phone or opening the door or stepping out of it when he asks to see her. And so, Donna, you don't say whether y'all are having sex, but I have to think with him talking about your tits, y'all yeah. probably are. And I hope he's laying that pipe well and, you know, got you walking a little crooked from time to time. Because I think that's a good thing for everybody's life. But, I just feel like you need to be a little more clear what it is. Are you looking for personality characteristics? Are you looking for, oh, you know, one of the things I love about you, you have such a big heart. Whenever I look like I might even be down or something bad happens to someone around you, you're always there with the calm and reassuring word. You know, thus far, now you could be a bitch on 99 pairs of roller skates. But for now, based on what I've seen, I'm intrigued by your heart, and I'm intrigued, you know, that I just feel very comfortable around you. Like, I don't feel like I have to put on any shows. I don't have to do any stunts. I can just be me. And, you know, that kind of thing. But he just stumbled and bumbled for, what'd she say, 20 seconds.
20 seconds,
and
yeah.
then just set your tits. So... I have a feeling that she probably was looking for something a bit deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. But girl, I would say you need to do some self-exploration work around this because you're tripping. And I would also come at him with the question again, but also think about yourself. What attracts you to him?
Yeah. And just realize that, you know, you will have an advantage because you are going to come with a prepared answer. He was not. Mm-hmm. You know, he had no quote-unquote warning, so to speak.
Yeah, because I feel like, I mean, he certainly had warning now with the initial question that she posed, but he might be like, well, I dodged that bullet, so I'm good. And meanwhile, she's lying in wait, ready to ask the question again. And he's thinking he's on easy street. So it sounds like, Donnie, you've created a little more of a mess for yourself than you intended. And I think maybe you needed to sit down with him and just have a conversation as opposed to putting him on the spot. Because it sounds like he had that deer in the headlights look.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know, Donna. But be more clear, be more complete in your questioning, and be willing to hear the answers. That's all I got for you, Donna.
Yeah, me too.
All right. You might have a nice rack. That means you can draw somebody else with it if he ain't worth shit. So make it work, girl. Make it work. All right.
Okay, now it's time for Help a Brother Out. This is where we answer questions from the men out there. And this week's question comes from Luke. And it's actually sort of related to our main topic. This is a long question, so you talked about last week we didn't have enough information, so I think this time we may have enough information, so we'll see.
Okay, I got my notepad out.
Yes. Okay, my husband and I have been married for going on 3 years and have been together for a total of 5. The first year of a relationship was fine. I'm versed, so it worked out. My health now prevents me from bottoming as much as I used to, and my husband refuses to bottom, though he did and enjoyed it at the beginning of our relationship. We decided to compromise by having threesomes where we both got the top. Okay. They were looking for a steady bottom at the time also. Mm-hmm. We had the worst luck with that, given that we weren't attracted to the same type of guys. And a lot of the guys I'm attracted to, this is Luke, that I'm attracted to, aren't attracted to my husband solely because he's black. That's a whole other subject.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
So we had a strict agreement in place where we'd only talk to guys together and only do stuff together. We agreed if one of us said no to a guy, we'd both stop talking to him. My husband violated that rule 3 times. Oh. I catch him sending nudes or talking to a specific guy or two over and over. He apologized each time, but I'm still resentful. At this point in our relationship, we decided on a new agreement that's like an open relationship. He can have sex with whoever he wants, top only, and I can have sex whoever I want to, top only, with various rules in place. Initially, I enjoyed it because I was finally getting to have sex with guys I was attracted to. I did give in a lot and settled for some of the ones he was attracted to before and ended up unpleased and watching. Anyway, now I'm not so sure anymore. I feel like we've saturated our marriage, like the sanctity is gone, if that makes sense. I've always struggled with that old-fashioned thought pattern in the back of my mind, but the more primal part of me enjoys the guys I'm getting to meet up with. But why do I find myself unhappy? Not really sure what I'm looking for exactly, maybe just to vent? Maybe advice of someone that's been through something similar. I just kind of feel lost in my marriage. I love my husband, but I find myself occasionally thinking, what if? So, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, but it kind of makes sense. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things going on there. For starters, I think that it was probably wise to open a relationship because it's one thing to sacrifice for your partner, but if it's not being reciprocated, that's a problem. So I think that it was probably a good idea for you guys to open a relationship, which you did, because obviously the emotional bond is still there for you. You know, you weren't like, well, if I can't fuck you, then I'm out of here.
Right, exactly.
So I feel like that was a very sound decision. The parameters that you set them were probably okay. But you said they closed it up again after the infidelity?
Well, they have a different set of rules. Now, he didn't go to detail about what the rules are. They can have sex with whoever they want to. Mm-hmm. But only being a top.
Oh, so, that's right.
Yeah.
And see, that's odd. So, okay.
Well, now Luke can't bottom it. He can't bottom anymore because of health issues, or he can't bottom as much as he used to.
Oh, that's what it was.
So
okay.
So that's why. Yeah.
Yeah, them hemorrhoids then flared up. Okay.
I'm assuming it was something like that.
I don't know, Luke. I just assume you have some varicose veins in your bungee. If you do, I'm really sorry, because you know. Yeah, that's rough. Okay, so then these two are basically... So really, the only thing Luke could do is have sex with other people.
Yeah, which is what they're doing, but he's saying that he just feels like their marriage... He said saturated. Like, their marriage is just... The sanctity is gone. And I guess in the back of his mind, he's saying he still likes that, like, the old... The way it was before. The old school way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would ask Luke, what is it that brought you two together in the first place? Because certainly there was a sexual incompatibility there from the get-go. So I feel like whenever you got, you know, two sword fighters, or you have, you know, two guys that are ready to get their toenails clipped on the ceiling fan, that form a couple... Automatically, there's something missing because both of you are kind of making a commitment that doesn't include something sexual that is a big part of you. So, with that in mind, it gets tricky. I do feel like there's probably a very strong emotional connection between these two men, which is why they've been able to last as long as they have.
I was gonna say, but I think that's where he's saying that gets saturated, because now I think there's so many other people involved. I think that's what he means when he says saturated. So,
Well, yeah, and I think it's probably time for them to really kind of articulate what it is they want, and maybe they need to establish sexual relationships with a stable of men, or maybe they need to. Them doing three ways hasn't worked well.
No. And it sounds like they're doing it on their own now, like they're doing separate. Like he's doing what, you know, Luke is sleeping with the guys he wants to sleep with. The husband is sleeping with the guys he wants to sleep with. Because he said he's finally getting to have sex with the guys that he was attracted to. So it sounds like he kind of gave in on some of the other ones because, you know, other issues. So they took in guys that he wasn't attracted to, but his husband was, and. You know, now he's getting to have sex with guys that he actually is attracted to.
Yeah. Well, and I also wonder just how much ethnicity has to do with Luke's interests. If he really is like, I want to have sex with black men, and you're married to one, but you're married to a black man.
Well, he didn't say that.
Well, I just wonder what's the big discrepancy between the two of them in terms of finding guys. I mean, it's not like finding guys are easy. It's not. But I'm curious about why the partner likes guys that don't have the attributes that Luke does. I feel like there's something there that we need a little more information on, because it seems like it's almost an impossibility if you're talking about finding potentially a... I don't know. It looks like they're looking for a unicorn.
No, I mean, because, like, me and my husband, like, we're in a monogamous relationship. So, now, I don't think either one of us would ever want to open our relationship up.
Okay.
But I would think, let's say if that was even a possibility, I don't think that I would go for someone that has the same, like, maybe body type as my husband. I may go for somebody that's different. So to me, that's probably what this is, because, I mean, if you're going to go and have sex, you might as well have sex with somebody that doesn't look like your husband, I suppose, you know? So, I mean, I guess that's what...
Well, but if that's what he's attracted to, then why wouldn't he have sex with men that look like his husband? As opposed to his husband.
Well, variety.
Well, yeah, and precisely. That's what I'm assuming. I mean... He's made it very clear what it is he wants, and And because of the health reasons, it has basically made both of them officially tops. And foreplay and all that is not getting it for him. So I think that I think that he's at a bit of an impasse at this point where he does need to kind of make heads or tails out of all this. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and part of me feels a little bit like, I don't want to say they've gone I don't want to say too far, but I can't think of another word, because I don't think they can go back to being monogamous, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what the path would be.
Well, I think in terms of, because you said that the sanctity of their marriage was kind of missing at that point.
He said, the sanctity is gone.
So I think that's really a starting point. I think you and your partner, Luke, need to really start dating one another again. Putting that space in place for the two of you to sit down and reconnect in ways that you haven't been. And to really find out why you got together in the first place, why you were willing to risk the relationship to keep, you know, to fulfill your sexual interests. It's a big risk that was taken, but you took it with the intention of hopefully resolving this conflict in your marriage. Because sexual problems are a big problem in a relationship, particularly when you got two men.
No, I was going to say, I agree with you, what your advice that they need to start dating again, because I think it would take the focus off of all these other guys. I mean, they could probably still do stuff, but it would put more focus on their marriage.
Yeah, because I wonder about, you know, how much disclosure is happening between the two of them about what they're up to.
Yeah, and how often is it happening? I mean, is this an everyday thing where every day it's done for, you know, some other guy, for both of them, or...
mm-hmm. And I think even if it is happening every day, so long as you're able to create a space where it's just the two of you and you're able to kind of rediscover and reconnect in those ways that brought you together in the first place, I think you'll start to get some of that specialness and that sanctity. You'll start refilling that pool, because it's definitely drained out.
Yeah.
because for starters, the infidelity, you can't overlook that, whether it was him having sex with someone else or the sexting that was going on with the pictures and you know, you did build up some resentment there. So I can understand why the relationship is just feeling very for you. It's not, what he did was not cool, but it happens. And so I think you guys need to have a conversation where you really lay out what it is that's going on with him, you know, because it's like he's basically tried to tell you something three times now, and you've kind of heard but not really. I think that resentment is understandable, but it's not constructive. You've really got to get to the bottom of what's going on in your marriage. And it's going to require a frank conversation. It's going to require a lot of work. It's going to require you guys really setting aside that time and creating that space for you guys to just be who you are. And one day you're gonna sit there and look across the table at this guy and you're going to be all in love with him again, because you're going to remember why he's there and why you're there. You know, I do feel like creating spaces like that in relationships is really important, but it's also very difficult to do sometimes. So, because it takes time.
Yeah, I completely agree. Totally agree.
Yeah, so definitely... It sounds like, you know, Luke needs to have a conversation with his husband about the infidelity.
Yeah.
And not so much in an accusatory tone, but...
Not, you're wrong and you're bad, you know, how you're a terrible person, but...
Yeah, just I need to. I'd like to understand if you have anything to share with me about this. That's kind of where you have to approach this conversation with your husband, because there are things swimming around in his head that his actions have now manifested, and he just hasn't figured out the words or gotten up the guts to tell you. So you gotta create a space for him to talk to you about this stuff. Well, that's all I got for Luke.
Me too.
I feel like I could say more, but it'd be running in circles.
That's me too.
Okay. All right, we can wrap this baby up then.
Yes. Just want to give the email address out again. So it's if you want to send a letter for Ask Your Brista or Help a Brother Out, it is sexualhealingpod@gmail.com.
And you can find us tweeting and chatting on occasion on Twitter at PodSexual. And we also have our Facebook page, which is Sexual Healing from Top to Bottom. And you can subscribe to our podcast that is still chugging along like the little engine that could.
Yeah.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts. We are on Google Play Music. We are on Stitcher. And you can also go to our website and download and listen there. It's www.sexualhealingpod.com.
Yeah.
So that's sexualhealingpod.com. And that's all I got in the midst of this wicked week.
That's it for me, too.
That's it for you? Okay. So we'll talk to y'all next week.
Yes.
We may continue our conversation of relationships. One of us might get a hair up our butts and go in a totally different direction for next week.
But
you will have material.
Yes.
All right. Well, y'all take care of yourselves now.
All right. Till next time.
Have a great week. What was that?
Till next time.
Oh, till next time. I thought you said something about a tire.
No.
Okay. I can't hear either. All righty. So y'all have a great time. See you next week.